Welcome to Wild Trekker. I'm George Toombs here in Montreal, and this is the fourth episode of Wild Trekker, my series of weekly 50-minute podcasts. Wild Trekker is a writer's notebook, consisting by turns of audio chapters from ongoing works, soundscapes, adventures, interviews with fascinating people, reflections, original plays, reportage, stories behind stories, jam sessions with wonderful musicians, and more. Wild Trekker is a fluid kind of sound art. I hope you enjoy it. Today, I have something special for you. Voyage Beyond the Ends of the Earth. In this original play, an Arctic supply ship plunges into the supernatural. So, welcome aboard. Nighttime. The ship is shrouded in thick fog. The lights are out on the bridge. All I can see is the orange flare of officers and men dragging on their cigarettes, and Captain Sinclair stooping over the radar screen. There's dense pack off the Labrador coast. So we've headed further out into Iceberg Alley on our way north, where the current bears ice calved from glaciers in Greenland and Ellesmere down the Labrador Sea to just east of Newfoundland. The chief wanders up.
Nice scenery you've got up here, Captain.
We can't see the bow.
Any ice cubes out there?
Look at the radar.
Are all these bergs?
There are 25 icebergs within a 3-mile radius. The ones I can see aren't the ones I'm worried about.
Alexei, call Jacques at the bow and find out what he can see.
That's me, Alexei Bernier, second officer on a general cargo ship, bound from Montreal to Inuit settlements in the Eastern Arctic. Normally, I would be officer of the watch right now, but with the amount of ice up here, the captain has taken over. He's been doing this since the age of 19. It's like stepping across a live minefield.
There are no growlers at the moment. The dark stuff, multi-year. But we're banging into a fair amount of ice, and I can just barely see bergs ahead, looming through wisps of fog from time to time. We have to thread our way through.
The old man won't like this. The old man is Malcolm Oakley, the owner. I remember when he hired me at the head office of Anticosti Shipping Lines in Montreal.
So, Bernier, you have your papers. You grew up on the sea?
Lower St. Lawrence, sir. Sailed and kayaked on the river from the age of 5.
I see. Ever been in a marine accident, Bernier? I had a first officer once, just on the point of getting his master's license. Got distracted just when the ship was approaching the dock in Natashquan and drove her up onto the wharf. We had to send that ship to Les Machins for a month of repairs. In the summer, the Highland Princess runs to the Arctic. In the fall and winter, she's in the Latin American and Eastern Mediterranean trades. Well, are you up for it?
He liked listening to the sound of his own voice, the old man. He kept me there, with the grandfather clock ticking and old Dutch marine paintings on the oak-paneled walls, to tell me stories about his mother salmon fishing on the Gaspé Peninsula when he was a boy. The stories blew on until he ran out of wind. He saw me not just as an officer, but as a budding young writer. I was working on a few stories of my own, sometimes in my native French, sometimes in English. I admit, I was less interested in the old man than in his 20-year-old granddaughter, Miranda. The first time I see her, the concert hall in Montreal, I'm alone. It comes like an epiphany. Here she is, in a black cocktail dress, standing before me, the faint sound of her breath drowning out the hubbub of the concertgoers, with her long auburn hair and ivory skin and green eyeshadow. We exchange glances. She feels the fire of my eyes.
Bonjour, Alexis.
Alexis.
Yes, sir?
Call Jacques again and find out what he can see in this damn fog.
Brad, 4 points off the starboard bow.
4 points it is, Captain.
Miranda's an artist and poet. She's accompanying the old man north with us to paint scenes in the Arctic. She comes up to the bridge with her grandfather, long enough to see there's nothing to see. Oh, Miranda, I feel an electric current passing through me. When my watch ends, I head below decks to join the crew. Brad O'Hara, the newfie, takes out his fiddle to relax. Through the ship's hull, we can hear the moaning song of whales around us in the deep. I head to my cabin and crash. Two in the morning. At this time of year, there's no night to speak of. We're nosing our way out of the Labrador Sea and westwards into the calm waters of Hudson Strait. The floes shift and crack, hiss and splash, grind and thud as we weave around them. The captain has left the bridge, and I stand watch alone with Eric Lavoie at the wheel. I call him the sailor of the apocalypse. He sometimes gets this strange, fanatical vibe. He's met Jesus Christ twice. He knows the devil in person. Just don't get him talking about the Antichrist. Eric's a dark angel fighting a spiritual war all on his own. But he's a good wheelsman. Miranda Oakley has joined us on the bridge. the fur-lined hood of her parka wrapped around her face.
Oh mon Dieu, how beautiful. There's so much up here to see right now.
Le brouillard. Après nous avoir ensevelis, quelques jours durant, il se lève soudain, comme un rideau sur un spectacle hors nature. À l'horizon, j'aperçois cette lueur jaunâtre du nord, et plus près, sous un ciel morne, disparaissant dans le clair-obscur encore embrumé, des icebergs de toutes les formes, les uns en saillie, tranchant, les autres en rondeur, voluptueux, plusieurs comme des pics gris, d'autres teintés de bleu et inclinés bizarrement, tous silencieux, instables, comme à l'agonie. Irrésistiblement, je glisse dans la fente qui sépare le réel et le fantastique. The fog lifts, revealing that amber glow of the Arctic horizon, and close around us, under a bleak, slate-colored sky, disappearing in the misty play of darkness and light, icebergs of all shapes, some pinnacled, pointed, others round, voluptuous, a few like gray crags, others tinged with blue and leaning awkwardly. All silent, unsteady, in the last gasp of existence. Irresistibly, I slip into the crevasse widening between reality and fantasy.
Sarah, these are apocalyptic times, that's for damn sure.
C'est là que nous l'appréhendons, objet imposant à l'horizon, dégageant un panache de fumée noire, il nous ensorcelle. Furtivement, nous nous approchons de cette bête fumante qui, au bout de quelques heures, se transforme sous nos yeux en une table de glace bleu-argentée dont la surface, vue de près, est une succession de cimes et de cols, de crevasses ruisselant jusqu'au bas de ses côtes. C'est le plus grand iceberg que nous ayons jamais vu. 300-400 fois notre navire. Un monstre. Sa masse luisante cache facilement le navire qui nous donnait rendez-vous plus loin. Je perds ma science.
$275 it is.
That's when we see it. A massive object on the horizon, giving off a plume of black smoke, bewitching us. Stealthily we approach this steaming beast. After a few hours, it shifts before our eyes. becoming a flat-topped berg of silvery blue ice, whose surface, from up close, we now see as a succession of peaks and troughs. Of slits streaming down to the waterline. The biggest iceberg we've ever seen. 300-400 times the size of our ship. A monster. Its glowing mass looms so large that we have to sail around it to find another cargo ship waiting for an icebreaker escort. I'm losing whatever I thought I knew.
I'm losing whatever I thought I knew. Whatever I thought I thought I knew. Whatever I thought I knew. Whatever I thought I knew.
Miranda, are you still up? It's 11:30 in the evening. You should let the men get on with their work.
All right, Grandpa. Salut, Alexis.
At 5:30 next morning, after a few hours of sleep, I go out onto the foredeck, sit on a bollard, and begin writing in my notebook. I remember, in my cabin, around 1 a.m., feeling a terrific whack. We must have run into a low-lying hunk of ice, probably a growler, and the ship shuddered as if about to come apart at the seams. Everything on board fell dead silent, and I went back to sleep for a few hours. Now I see the ships jammed fast in the dense ice pack. My watch starts at 8 o'clock. I wish Miranda were here.
Good morning, Alex.
The light is refracted, distorting the bare hills of Baffin Island, tumbling them up and over, down and up again, stretching them vertically so they look like wads of rocky bubble gum, then horizontally so they look about ready to take flight, breaking in two so the bottom is the inversion of the top, but the top is a right side up reflection of the bottom.
À tribord tout à l'heure, m'appuyant sur le rail, je regarde la côte accidentée de Baffin et perché au-dessus d'elle, son image inversée, creuse et bosse doublées et renvoyées dans l'air. Là où la raison placerait le ciel, s'étend de l'eau libre au reflet scintillant. À l'aube, un iceberg se greffe à son jumeau céleste. Les deux se déguisent en mâts de fête. Eau de forme, veste de loup, se sépare, traîne un moment, puis se volatilise. To starboard just now, leaning on the rail, I look at the rugged coast of Baffin and its inverted mirror image, dancing above it. Peaks and hollows doubled and thrown back into the air. Where the sky ought to be, I see extending a body of open water with glimmering reflections. At dawn, an iceberg stretches up from the sea, shifting, reaching up to an inverted hovering twin. Together they become a maypole, a top hat, a puffball. They wander away from each other, hang back, then vanish.
Right, Bernier. So you have your papers. You grew up on the sea? Ever been in a marine accident, Bernier?
Miranda, something's not right. I'm really worried. We must get up to the bridge this instant. Come with me. The old man, the captain, the first officer, Brad O'Hara, they're all standing there with bloodshot eyes, frozen in place, stiff as boards. They look like they're about to get to work, but they're unable to see or hear. Dead to the world. Something has happened here. We can walk around them, wave our hands in front of their faces, but they won't blink or budge. They're like statues. The ship is bewitched.
What are you saying, Alexei? That's impossible. Grandpa, wake up. Please, wake up. It's me, Miranda.
We seem to be the only two people left on the ship who can move around, speak, think straight. Miranda, we're not that far from land. I'm going to toss the ship's ladder over the side and get down onto the ice and go for help. I'll be back as soon as I can. Don't go anywhere. Wait for me. Everything will be okay. I climb down the ship's ladder, banging my head against the red hull in the harsh wind that's blowing out of nowhere. It's hard running over the ice surface. It's hard because I have to climb up hummocks and slide down the other side, and besides, the ice is moving. Now I'm at the edge of a patch of open water. I'm afraid I'll fall in. I see flashes of light underwater. I hear the dull thud of faraway explosions. Could it be pressure ridges collapsing somewhere? Or naval mines going off? Am I in danger? Suddenly, a breathless figure, his face all blue and tawny, emerges from the water, squinting and wiping the salt from his eyes.
Who are you?
I was just freeing them up.
Who?
He pulls some seaweed off his face.
Walrus, seal, belugas. They got trapped underwater.
You may not know about Sedna. I just battled with her.
He has a quizzical, playful expression in his eyes. Are you human? What are we going to do? My ship's over there.
What ship is that?
The Highland Princess, a cargo ship out of Montreal.
You look like you're freezing cold. Let's go ashore and build a fire. Here.
Jump onto my kayak. Mysteriously, the dense ice floes open up for us a course straight to the shoreline. It's as if we're running along the surface of a lake now, smooth, without a ripple, swans trumpeting. I don't know what to think. Am I losing my mind? What's happening to me? You seem to be under stress. I can see your soul right now, but it's smaller than you. This soul is the fire that makes you a man. This is the compass driving you through life. But if you're not careful, a malicious spirit could steal it from you and bury it in a cave or under the snow so you couldn't find it again. And then surely, once your body and soul were separated, you would die. I see your soul wandering, Alexei.
How do you know my name?
You're looking for something or someone. Nothing makes sense. There's no sign of the strange blue and tawny man. I must have fallen asleep. The sun has moved back to the eastern horizon. The wolves, they must be after my soul. Wait, I can see my ship way out there on the ice. The red-hulled Highland Princess. I must get back to Miranda. I must save her. Well, from what you say, Alexei, you may be hallucinating, given everything that's been happening lately. This man, he seems to be able to read your mind. He lives in another world, or at least his world is not the same as what you see. He can travel on the backs of fish, fight the sea goddess, speak to animals, time travel. He alone can deal with Tungak, the one great spirit who is death itself. Miranda,
This ship is under a spell. Is there anything we can do to free your grandfather, the captain, everyone else on board? Here I thought we were sitting in the ship's galley together, Miranda and I, sipping tea, but now we're walking alone on a wild desert beach, with the tide rolling in. It seems such a barren shore. I can't find even a single flower or patch of lichen. And there, in the midnight blue sky, what is it? A bulging, beige, and creamy gray planet, flattened at the poles, with icy rings circling around it, tilted at a weird angle. How can we breathe here? Where's all this water from? I feel her warm body pressing against mine. We're pouring into each other, flowing together. I wrap my arms around her back. We kiss. I want to fuse with her body. It's now, right now, but I can see her body right through my wandering hands. And when I look into her eyes, I see right through her to the rings of Saturn beyond. Her soul must be taking leave of her body. Are we doomed to die here, alone?
Cent-vingt-deux, Eric. 122. 128, Eric. 128.
Grandpa, you're all right? What happened?
Of course. Everything's fine. Lavoie, how do things look out there?
Well, sir, these are apocalyptic times, that's for damn sure.
Yes, Captain?
133, Eric. 133.
Where are we now, Grandpa?
Miranda?
Excuse me?
I don't understand. Miranda's so reserved now. She won't even look at me.
Did we ever? Did we never? If she has any knowledge of what's been happening. I mean, any knowledge. She's keeping it a secret.
I remember the first time I saw Miranda.
It was like an epiphany. The concert hall in Montreal. I was alone. Here she was, in a black cocktail dress, standing before me, the faint sound of her breath drowning out the hubbub of the concertgoers, with her long auburn hair and ivory skin and green eyeshadow. We exchange glances. She feels the fire of my eyes.
Bonjour, Alexis.
I wonder,
when I look at someone, am I seeing that someone, or only seeing the projection of my own desires, fears, beliefs, and doubts? Does Miranda become the person I want her to be so that I can recognize her? Or is there some halfway point or meeting ground between Miranda as she really is and Miranda as I picture her? If I'm projecting what I want to believe onto her, do I actually see her at all? Miranda, are you really there?
A few days later, we offloaded cargo in a few settlements. Now we're caught in a mind-bending storm. Mind-bending. Mind-bending. Miranda, we're in Ungava Bay, edging around huge blocks of ice. In the rain, Akpatuk Island to starboard is looming strangely. You can see the sheer cliffs of the north shoreline of the island over there. And icebergs caught in the ice pack and stretches of open grey water. But the ship has to proceed slowly. Some of these ice floes are 15 feet thick. Just imagine 5 meters of solid multi-year ice. And that would make a dent in the bow if we ran into it. Not to mention a gash in the hull. What about my cargo?
La baie d'Ungava, L'échelle semble déjà plus humaine. Semble, je dis bien, car je me méfie. Le navire se fraye un chemin à travers les glaces, arrache des blocs turquoises qui crient sur la coque, qui se tordent dans notre sillon grésillant. Paniqué, l'air vaincu, ils refont surface et regagnent la banquise. Après l'eau fumante, l'eau résistante comme de l'acier, l'eau à marcher dessus et à faire flotter dans les airs, voici l'eau traître, prête à nous transpercer comme une lame dans une motte de lard. Ungava Bay. Everything seems on a human scale. I say seems because I remain on my guard. The ship carves a path through the ice, ripping out turquoise blocks that screech along the hull, then writhe, panic-stricken, in our sizzling wake, and freeze back into the ice pack. After steaming water, water hard as steel, water to walk on and that floats in the sky, here now is treacherous water, ready to cut through us, like a knife slapping through warm butter. Tempête force 11 se lève, la mer se couvre de bancs d'écume allongés dans la direction du vent. Le bord des crêtes est tout soufflé, les glaces mortelles planent au-dessus des lames. Une fois, deux fois, le navire cherche à s'abriter dans un estuaire de fortune, mais rate sa manœuvre. La troisième est la bonne. Poussant des gémissements, notre vaisseau tire sur l'ancre. À tel point que pour passer de bâbord à tribord, je suis contraint de remonter la pente. Plus rien ne trompe. Tout est permis.
Plus rien ne trompe. Plus rien
tout
trompe.
Est permis.
Plus rien ne trompe.
Tout est permis.
Tout est permis.
Now a violent storm blows in. Beaufort 11. Mountainous waves are building. The sea is covered with long, writhing banks of foam running before the wind. The wave crests are whipped up in a dancing frenzy. Dark growlers bump around in the troughs. We try once to seek shelter in a shallow bay, then twice, and finally manage it a third time. The groaning ship drags her anchor, heeling over to one side. When I cross the deck from port to starboard, I actually have to climb upwards. Make no mistake about it, anything can happen up here.
Anything can happen up here.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I based this original play on an Arctic supply voyage I made a few years ago, from Montreal, down the St. Lawrence River, then up the Labrador Sea to Baffin Island, and finally into Ungava Bay in the far north of Quebec. The descriptions of ice capes are taken from my notebook at the time. The ship wasn't actually called the Highland Princess. She was called the Federal Pioneer, and last thing I heard, she was tied up at a dock in Alexandria, Egypt. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the music. That was David Carbonneau on the trumpet, Gilles Hébert on percussion, Brad Hurley on the penny whistle and Irish bagpipes, Laura Risk on the violin, and Cameron Wallace on the saxophone and clarinet. And that's me, playing the piano. If you would like to know more about my creative works, including my two upcoming polar films, The Blinding Sea and Lands of Crystal, go to my author's website at www.evidencia.net. And Evidencia is spelled E-V-I-D-E-N-T-I-A, Evidencia. This Wild Trekker episode is copyright 2019, George Toombs, all rights reserved. Here's Marie Frenette singing the closing theme of Wild Trekker, with Pascal Desmeux accompanying her on the guitar. Let's get together soon. Bye for now.